Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Shireen Stanford. Daryl Cameron is an assistant professor of psychology and a research associate in the Rock Ethics Institute at Penn State. His work focuses on empathy and moral decision making. He directs the Empathy and Moral Psychology Lab at Penn State. His research looks at when, why, and how people choose empathy, and examines people's responses to mass suffering during significant crises like the coronavirus pandemic. We're recording this interview by phone from our homes. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
I know there are different ways to define it, and there's debate even maybe about the definition, but how do you personally define empathy?
So empathy, there have been so many folks who have written about how difficult of a term it is to define. And one often used set of distinctions in psychology and neuroscience is between empathy as emotional affective empathy. So you share in someone's experiences. If I see someone feeling sad, I resonate with that sadness. I feel it myself. That's what a lot of people mean when they mean empathy. But sometimes you also think about a more cognitive form of perspective taking. You try to actively understand the content of someone's mind and their experiences. And then also compassion or sympathy. So even if you don't necessarily share in someone's experiences, you can nevertheless try to generate a warm feeling of care and concern, a pro-social desire to help. And so my lab has studied all three of those facets of empathy. And they often run together, but they do dissociate sometimes. You know, you could understand what someone is thinking but not want to help them, or you could resonate with someone but not fully understand why they're feeling the way they are. And so they seem to do different things sometimes.
So, and I think one of the things just in doing research for this, that there's a difference between empathy and compassion, for example. Why are those different?
Well, so this is actually a point of some really interesting, at least I think, fascinating debate in the field of psychology and also ethics too. One classic concern is that with empathy, it might make you susceptible to certain kinds of burnout. So if you're taking on the emotions of everybody you come into contact with, that could become exhausting, fatiguing over time. And that might very well, at least some of our work suggests, might be part of what leads into considerations of like empathy deficits and empathy gaps for other people. Some argue that because empathy is somewhat can be exhausting in some cases, compassion is an interesting alternative. If compassion is merely generating a positive caring feeling, a wish for someone to be free from suffering, you know, why should that be as exhausting as empathy? There's been a lot of really interesting work in neuroscience about this, drawing in contemplative traditions and ethical arguments that compassion is a more sustainable alternative to empathy when it comes to being generous and helpful in challenging circumstances. Now, not everyone agrees with this, and some of my work tries to critically interrogate this landscape of claims, but that is one distinction that's often drawn.
And what are some limitations to empathy? I think I always thought of it as sort of like, well, of course it's a good thing, but maybe it's, you know, that the research shows that there are some limits. So what are some limitations to empathy?
Well, two of the ones that are the most well-known and discussed, the one is sometimes called compassion collapse, but it's the idea that when faced with mass suffering contexts, like a pandemic or a war where there are hundreds or thousands or millions of people at risk or who have died, empathy appears to not scale to the scope of suffering. And so if you show someone, a single person, like a single identifiable person who's in need, people's empathic emotions are often quite sensitive to such an individual. But if you show them stats about a large number, it's not as emotionally compelling. And so that's often taken as one major limit. There is a caveat that it's critical to understand why that limit is there. And depending upon what we know about that why question, that could lead to different conclusions about how good or bad empathy is. So that's one limit that's often talked about. It's all, Some talk about it as something called enumeracy, just the idea that empathy is not sensitive to number. Another one is that empathy appears to break down along different kinds of group divisions, whether that be political rivalries, certain kinds of demographic divisions, in some cases, even minimal groupings. You just divide people into two arbitrary groups and animosities can form. And it seems that there are plenty of documented cases, both scientifically, but also just in everyday life, you see these animosities emerge where people seem to shut off empathy and compassion for someone who's thought of as being on the other side of some division. And so those two limitations, the insensitivity to number and the weakness for outgroups, so to speak, those are two of the most often discussed limitations.
And are we born with empathy, or is that something we have to learn?
That is a wonderful question. It's very complicated. I mean, of course, in some ways, there are a lot of things that are, if not innate, we come ready to learn certain kinds of things in the world. And so to some degree, there's been a lot of fascinating work in developmental psychology and developmental neuroscience on the development of empathy and how different kinds of empathy, this emotional, affective empathy, perspective taking, compassion, how do those develop over time? And there's been discussion about how, of course, we are all meant to care for kin and deal with close familial ties and relationships, and how what's called the caregiving system might be an important part of our empathic suite of capacities, but also socialization and interaction with family and peers over time, and how it really does seem to matter in various ways how the kinds of interactions you have that support the development of certain kinds of empathic abilities. And so it's the somewhat, I don't know if boring is the right word, the answer is it's a mix of both. There are some things that seem somewhat built in, but there are a lot of really fascinating open questions about how malleable empathy is, how it's grown over time, both over long periods of time, like over the course of a lifespan, but also in the moment. Can you change how you relate to your own feelings in a way that you can expand your empathy and change your response?
Why is empathy an important thing to study? Why has it fascinated you for this long?
You said something earlier about how empathy seems to have this obvious connection to morality. And it, in many ways, it does. As some have written, you know, it seems that many folks in developmental psychology think about how empathy can be a conduit for how you learn about what's morally wrong. So, you know, I have two kids, and, you know, if I want to try to get them to think about why they should behave appropriately, you might say, well, consider that, you know, you in doing this action, it might cause someone else to feel bad. It might cause them some kind of psychological, some kind of emotional response. And so to the degree that you can encourage empathy or the just act of empathizing, the idea is that you begin to understand the division between self and other, appreciation for others' needs and desires and experiences, and that could be the long-term foundation for how you develop moral appreciation and moral rules. But I think the current state of evidence in psychology, which makes this a fascinating, I personally think a fascinating topic for study, is that it's complicated. And then in some cases, you see that relationship emerge. But there are other cases where empathy and morality seem to come into conflict. So like Dan Batson, famous social psychologist over the past 30 years, he did some work back in the 90s looking at how empathy intersects with considerations of justice. So, for example, if you induce empathy for a particular person, would you be willing to prioritize that person over others, even in a way that like violated considerations of procedural justice? And so if you really light the fire of empathy, can it get you to do things that might conflict with other beliefs and principles that you might have? And so those are the kinds of findings that have inspired some to take a different lens on empathy and what its usefulness is in everyday life. People have been discussing what are empathy's effects, and then how do we evaluate the positives and the negatives? Because there are trade-offs, as with any kind of psychological process.
You mentioned that you have two kids. How do you talk to them about empathy, or what do you tell them about it?
We try to encourage them to think about the consequences of their actions for the lives of other people. So, here's why shouting at the top of your lungs might impact our well-being or the well-being of others around us. But just generally trying to understand emotions, trying to encourage our kids to think about their emotions and the emotions of other people, trying to just encourage a sort of situational awareness, attunement to the world around them and the presence of other people, encouraging self other boundaries, so of respect for boundaries, and that this person might have different goals and desires than you. And I mean, it's very informal, and it's not by any way like an empathy education of sorts. But it that's how we, in terms of our own lived experience, try to encourage that in our kids.
Right now, we're in the middle of this global pandemic. The coronavirus and the responses to it rely on people in communities working together. It asks people to make sacrifices for people they don't know, they may never meet. Does that require empathy?
So my lab is really fascinated by this question. I mean, for me personally, I think it's interesting to consider that on the one hand, to the degree that you think about the experiences of other people and you care about the experiences of strangers, that might motivate you to engage in more distancing behaviors and various kinds of pro-social actions. You see different kinds of things like volunteering to pick up groceries for people who were immunocompromised, knitting face masks, all kinds of interesting pro-social behaviors that are emerging spontaneously and organically. And I mean, that might suggest an interesting role for empathy. Some have also talked about how empathy could point in different directions too. So, sometimes someone who's very empathetic, you might speculate, this is not based upon evidence, but you might just speculate, might they be more willing to break distancing in order to go see someone they really want to see? And so it's their interest. I think it's the relationship is likely to be somewhat complicated. And it may turn upon who you're asking about empathy for, the different motivations people have in terms of how they're empathizing and for whom. I guess the short answer is I think it's likely relevant. And I think we're trying to figure out the ways in which it is. And we're trying to do a mix of generalizing from some past work and thinking about limits on what that might be, the limits on generalization. But also, in this novel situation, what are some of the relevant factors that could be in play that could shape how people direct their empathy? And I think we're still trying to work out because it's just such an interesting and complicated and challenging situation to think through.
And your lab is going to be doing some coronavirus-related research. What are you hoping to look at?
Right. So, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, we're doing some, we got a seed fund grant from the Huck Life Sciences Institute as part of their call for researchers at Penn State to do rapid research to understand people's responses to the pandemic. Our broad question was essentially what I described. So it's trying to look at different ways of measuring and manipulating empathy, and seeing how that relates to people's willingness to engage in different kinds of distancing behaviors, different kinds of pro-social behaviors, like volunteering to go help someone in need, and also how we think morally about some of these behaviors. So how we make moral wrongness and praise judgments about these kinds of actions. And so it's that's the general thrust is to better understand from this relationship, and critically from the perspective that empathy is flexible, and that whether we choose to feel empathy and how we direct empathy often turns upon our values and our goals. And so, taking this motivation-based approach to empathy, how can we understand how it might shape these pandemic behavior outcomes in different ways?
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Shireen Stanford. Our guest is Daryl Cameron, Assistant Professor of Psychology and Research Associate in the Rock Ethics Institute at Penn State. Your previous research, I want to talk about that, has found that empathy is maybe a choice. Can you talk a little bit about that and explain why someone would choose or not choose to have empathy?
I think that the starting point for this could be that, I mean, empathy seems very quick and fast. It almost seems like you're in a situation, you see someone in pain, you just feel a vicarious response yourself. And from that perspective, empathy might seem to just come to us as a given, as a default. And so then when you see empathy fail in response to mass suffering or in response to different outgroups, that might be taken to be a major limitation on empathy, a pair of limitations on empathy. But that depends upon the assumption that we couldn't change that response. And so if you changed what people wanted to feel in those situations, what happens to empathy? And so in some prior work, we've, for example, shown that although empathy does often look less responsive to the suffering of large numbers of people compared to a single person, if you change people's expectations about how financially costly empathy is, that can remove that insensitivity to large numbers. In more recent work, we looked at whether looking at the intergroup context, so within research on a phenomenon called dehumanization, whereby people often reduce how much they ascribe mental interiority to other people. That's one way that psychologists talk about dehumanization. We find that people are more likely to do that, especially for groups that are typically stigmatized, when they anticipate that empathy will be emotionally exhausting. If you think empathy is going to wear you out, our work suggests that at least in those studies, people are more willing to engage in dehumanization. And if you remove that expectation, you remove the dehumanization effect. And so those kinds of findings led us to this notion that empathy can often be a matter of what we want to feel. It's about how you expect and want to feel, in at least some cases. And so if you could change those expectations, at least in the short term, maybe that could potentially open up an avenue for changing how people relate to their own feelings. The example that I've sometimes talked about, you come across a commercial on TV that's excruciating. There's the commercial for SPCA that has a very emotionally, it's tragic images and very emotionally evocative music. And it's very difficult. I mean, if you love animals, it's very difficult to process that. It's just as a stimulus. And people sometimes will turn off, they'll turn away. That kind of active disengagement from that kind of environmental prompt. It's an example of the kind of phenomena that we study. And so those are just two examples, but we have plenty of other work that tries to think about this motivated choice way of thinking about empathy.
Right, so that if you, as you said, remove the expectation that if you see something you're gonna be asked to donate, that that can affect the way that people make decisions, as well as, whether or not they think it's gonna be hard work, hard mental work.
Right. So in more recent work, we had a paper come out last year that we developed a new measure to try to capture these decisions to empathize or not. The brief summary is that it's a series of choices. You can empathize or not with different individuals. And we just look at your free choices. Do you prefer to empathize or not with the suffering of strangers? And at least in those studies, we find that people tend to prefer not to. Although in subsequent work, we can move that around a little bit. It's not simply always the case, which is consistent with what I was suggesting earlier. But interestingly, maybe interestingly, a correlate of this empathy avoidance effect was the perception that empathy was hard work. So we asked people to rate the degree to which empathizing was cognitively effortful, difficult to think about, how successful did they feel the act of empathizing. And what we found was that the more likely you are to view empathy as hard work, the less likely you are to choose empathy. And then when we experimentally manipulate whether people feel like empathy is easy or not, we can shift whether they make these choices. And so it could have applicability to different kinds of real-world situations potentially, but the idea is that by examining motivations to empathize, and then measuring people's actual decisions about whether they want to empathize or not, we can maybe begin to have a finer lens on this empathic process.
This is also obviously an election year. Can you talk about the role that empathy plays in leadership and what we know about people's desires for leaders who have empathy?
I think, once again, the role of empathy in leadership varies, right? So I think one of the classic lessons from social psychology, the area of psych that I focus within, is it's that things are very much contingent. A lot of effects differ depending upon the situation and on particular roles. I mean, back in 2016, I wrote an op-ed piece for the Rock Ethics Institute about empathy in the presidential election. And, you know, there was some polling suggesting that people desire empathy in a leader, much as they desire many moral traits in a leader in leadership. But there's also some work suggesting that depending upon the kinds of decisions that have to be made, there's a variety of psychological features people want. And empathy might be one of them, but there could also be things like integrity, firmness of decision making. And so I think, you know, it's further complicated by it will depend in any election year, likely on the nature of the candidates involved, the particularities of the personalities involved. So I think, much as people have often talked about the positive consequences of empathy, someone who's empathetic could better understand the needs of their constituents, could perhaps better forecast the consequences of their decisions for large numbers of people. Whether that's something people want will likely turn upon maybe the policy goals that they have, or, you know, certain characteristics of what the voting populace might want.
So what do you hope your research will teach us, and what effect do you hope your research will have?
I mean, I think that there is a, you know, there are a number of questions people have about how they choose to live their lives, how they think about ethics, morality in the world. And, you know, on the one hand, I think that I consider my work just a starting point for conversations. I think most folks who work in moral psychology, you know, we try to be very careful not to suggest any sort of ethical conclusions from our research. We're examining how people think about ethics, empathy, morality. And what you choose to do with that information is up to you. It depends upon your personal values, what you hope to achieve in the world, and so forth. I think that people are very interested in these topics. You know, recently we hosted through the Rock Ethics Institute a panel on empathy, the Expanding Empathy series that I organized, and it had scholars from around the world coming to talk about their own work on empathy, but also its potential implications for the COVID-19 pandemic. And the goal there, and with my research as well, is to just get people thinking about empathy, having more awareness and knowledge about what it is and what it could be used for. And so ultimately, that's the main goal.
Is empathy a neutral term, or is it good or bad or both?
Well, I think it's kind of both. Like, it can be, and it depends very much on what you want. So in some cases, yes, empathy can lead us to appreciate that others are being harmed. It can lead us to understand and codify moral rules. And in some cases, it can lead us to neglect others who are legitimately in need. And so whether it's good or bad, I mean, in one way of thinking about it, any psychological process could be good or bad. So perspective taking could be good or bad. Reasoning, deliberation could be good, or it could be bad in some cases. And so, I mean, in some ways, that question, that's really an ethical question. And as a psychologist, you know, what I'm interested in, you know, what are the different consequences of different psychological processes? And how can we understand when they happen, when they don't? And it seems that with empathy, it's a tool that we have. We can use it for ends that some people think are good in some cases, and that in other cases, people think are bad. And so I think overall, I think it probably does. It's probably better to have it than not to have it. But I think how we think of its ethics and its relevance is very, very complicated, and really turns upon what are the outcomes you care about, and And how are you, and what are you evaluating those relative to?
If there's one takeaway you wanted people to have just about the role of empathy in our lives and the world around us, what would that takeaway be?
So I think one big takeaway is that we have the ability to expand our empathy. Empathy is often criticized. It's often criticized for being insensitive to mass suffering, for being less sensitive to outgroups. And from the arguments of some, that's a major limitation. That is, some have taken such scientific findings to the ethical conclusion that empathy should actually be jettisoned as a basis for moral behavior. Now, of course, that's a very controversial thesis, and it's, building an ethical claim atop scientific evidence, and so it's a complicated relationship there. My work suggests that at least in some cases, there's the possibility for us to change how we relate to our own feelings of empathy. And so some of those deficits can move around. And then if that's the case, then maybe what we then do with empathy, the ethical import of that, could change dramatically. So if we have the power to choose or not choose empathy depending upon our goals, then rather than attacking empathy for its apparent limitations, maybe we should discuss why people are choosing to engage with empathy or not. And by focusing on that question of what motivates you, what do you care about, and how does that shape how you relate to empathy, that might lead us in a number of potentially positive directions. It might make us think about, oh, what are the inhibitors? What's stopping you from empathizing? And can we identify those, test them, and see what happens if you remove the inhibitors? Or what are the things you can do to encourage people to think of empathy as a good thing, as useful in the world? And maybe that's something we're seeing right now. Again, an open question, scientifically speaking. I think tons of folks are trying to understand that at this very moment. But if we can, I guess the key take home would be, if we think of empathy as due to our motivations, our goals, and values as a function of our choices, that changes how we talk about empathy, how we think of it, and it could push forward some of these interesting ethical and philosophical conversations.
Daryl, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I really enjoyed it.
Daryl Cameron is an assistant professor of psychology and research associate in the Rock Ethics Institute at Penn State. His work focuses on empathy and moral decision making and looks at when, why, and how people choose empathy. Hear more Take Note interviews on our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Shereen Stanford, WPSU.